I was just talking about love, this word love we hear from everybody. But what is love? God is love. Our soul is of the same essence as that of God. We are also love personified. Love is innate in our souls. It radiates. It should have come in contact with the Over-Self. We call God, Paramatma. This has overflowed further, boost it would have got and overflowed with love. Instead of contacting our soul with God, you see, we are contacting our soul with Him. Soul and soul bodies. When you attach to the body, that is called as attachment. Love is one which just overflows within you and you forget yourself. This is a criterion to differentiate love from attachment. This love is spoken of in scripture. So as a rule, our soul should love God. God resides in every heart. That's the controlling power. If it is liberated from mind, matter and outgoing faculties, this will go up to the very source from which it has emanated. Light a candle, the flame will go up. Even you upturn it, even then the flame will go up. Soul, love of the soul will go up to the Over-Self. It will, if it remains attached, you see, with the body and outgoing faculties, that is no love, that is attachment. That's the difference between the two. To love God, whom we have not seen, is not possible. Unless you go up to that level. So while remaining in the body, you would like to love God. Then what you have to do? You must rise above body consciousness. Or come in contact with somebody in whom that God power is manifest, whose soul overflows with love and intoxication. So, that would never always look into the eyes of the Master. Eyes are the windows of the soul. In whatever color it is imbued, our soul is imbued, that very radiation will affect us. If the soul is imbued with love and intoxication of God, it will just become receptive to His soul through His eyes. Then you will have boost. You will forget your body. If the love keeps you in the body and tied to the body, that is no love, that is called attachment. That is very fine difference, you see, between the two. We speak of love everywhere. To love God, well, soul is of the same essence, a drop of the ocean of all consciousness that is in every heart. We are all brothers and sisters in God. And that very controlling power resides in every heart. If you look from that level, then there is no attachment. You are just hearing about one instance where Moses, God met Moses and told him, look here, I was very bent down with fever and I was very sick, lying in bed, and you did not care for me. He said, God, how can you be sick? Yes, I was sick. You see, where? Because that man, who loved me, you never went to just serve him and ask his wife, wherefore. So had you loved him, you would have done service to him. Love knows service and sacrifice. Then I would have been served, really. So I resided in every heart, you see. Now you find we have love what we call love, but it's no love, it is attachment. For one reason or the other, maybe the outer some purposes, selfish motive in view, or for the outer outgoing faculties should we drag you, others drag you to yourself and keep you in the body. That is a very fine difference, I'm speaking about attachment and love. When you love God can be can have a boost, you see, overflowed by coming in contact with the soul of somebody who is imbued with the love of God. That love will drag you up. You will forget your body, you see, and the environment. They're saying, the master saying, they say, when I see the master, you see, I become, what you say, no intellect, I forget all intellect, all I could, cognition, all body and environment, when I look at him, you see, that is love. Any love which you call love and keeps you in the body, that is no love, that is attachment. The love which, when you look into the eyes of somebody, that drags you up into the soul, if you forget your body, that is the criterion of what love is, you see. So that is why I always advise, don't look into the eyes of others. That's the way on which this lust attacks us. We are attacked by lust through eyes. You look to the eyes of others who are just imbued with lust or other lower things, you will have the same effect, really. Always look to the feet of everybody. Only manifest a God and man where you look into it, you will get better. I mean, just lift. Otherwise you will go down. I remember an instance in the life of Ramana, Lord Rama. Sita was abducted by Ramana. So on the way, her armament fell down on the ground. So Rama went in search of his bride. On the way he found some ornament. And his younger brother was there, Lakshman, called Lakshman. He told me, would you recognize these are the ornaments of your sister-in-law, elder brother's wife? No, that I don't know. I only can recognize the ornaments which are worn on the feet of my wife, not on the head. Just see the highest criterion of morality. He could recognize only the ornaments which the wife of Rama, Sita, wore on the feet, not on the head. From these we can just draw some lesson, you see. Always look to the feet of the others. You will never be attacked by lower impulses. If at all you have to look to the eyes of the Master who is imbued with the love of God. If so. Otherwise you will go down. And the only criterion is there, as I told you. If you look into the eye and forget your body and everything, that is love. If you are attached to the body, maybe as a master or anybody, you are going down. There is danger of going down. If the other body is strong, then you can be saved. Otherwise, he will have to do now. I am giving you a very fine difference, which is not given in books. And most of us, what you say, we have read for the right goal. So love is within you. When it is concentrated, then love overflows. When it comes in contact with the old self, God, it still further overflows. Just like there is a pipe, in which there are so many holes, and the water is flowing through the pipe. Drop by drop it falls out through those holes. If you close all the holes and let remain one open, then the water will shoot forth from that hole. See? So our soul is now, you see, under the control of mind, it is our soul, our love is distributed in so many ways. In our body, to our children, to our money, your name is paid. So if you withdraw your attention from all outside things and direct only one way out, the door lying at the back of the eyes, which is called the tenth door, or come in contact by concentration with the soul of somebody which is imbued with the love of God, you will have a boost. So, this is what is love. You can always use this criterion, how you find yourself. Love of God, He resides in every heart. In a sense, if they are already in the controlling power, then love for all humanity. For the sake of that love is no attachment, you see. You are always free. By looking at the faces of others, you will go up, forget the world. Now when you look at the others, you are attached there. That is no love. So this love is not, I mean, comes up as a result of your eat and drink, you see. It is already in your soul, innate in your soul. If you concentrate yourself, that love will rise, overflow. These are very delicate points which are not touched in detail in the books. So always avoid looking into the eyes of others. If at all you have to look in the eyes of the Master only. That will save you from many hazards. You come to the satsang for the sake of the Master, not for others. To have a little development. This is a practical school, I tell you. To have these things. These you can have only when you come in contact direct with the soul which is emanated through, which is imbued with the love of God. That will give you the same effect. If he is imbued, that way you will get color of that, you see, that intoxication you will have. So love is love, which when you have that, you forget your body and outward environment. And your natural, just like the candle goes up to the source of the all like sun, up, even you put it overturned. The same way you are all the way by looking to the men of the earth, to the eyes. Those people from the level of the soul, if you see, then you'll have a boost. Otherwise you'll go down. Such a man, you see, Emerson says, when I look to the people, all others, I see this love of the God shining through their eyes. You see, from that level. Not on the level of the outgoing faculties of the body. So, this love, you see, through love only we can know God. Those who do not know love cannot know God. This is what is meant by love. We take love for attachment, and that is no love. Attachment is no love. That is misfit love. The love of conscious entity should come in contact with all conscious God. Such a love, even if you are doing outward penance or any, you see, methods of your worship, if you always think of that, then you are saved. Otherwise you are stuck on. So love God. God resides in every heart. Love all those bodies with that, for the sake of the soul and the whole and the controlling power that keeps that soul in those bodies, not the body itself. Then you are saved. If you serve others from the same level, then that is service of God. So all masters say, ten guru says, understand ye all, whether you are belong to one religion or the other, Those who have true love, their body is used to true love. Love and true love. That means love which is misfit, that's called attachment, and true love is real love. God is love, and through love alone you can know God. This is a very delicate point, you see. This touch in books, not given in detail like that. Now you can judge daily from your own family whether you are really having love. Such love will give you love for all, but not attachment. So really, the love overflows when you come in contact with some soul which is already and abrogated, I would say, with the love of God. That won't leave you in the body, attached to the body, but forget your body. So concentration is the source. Concentration within your own self. That will lead you up. Once Christ was sitting in a multitude, somebody told him, "Here, your mother coming at your back. Oh, all these are my mothers and brothers." you know the level from which he was talking? Mothers, sisters and brothers come from the level of the body. He said, "All these are my brothers and sisters." Tenth Guru, when his four sons were just martyred, mother, his wife came up, "Where are my children?" "So, four have been sacrificed for the sake of the thousand for living body." This is love, isn't it? Ye prema. Try to understand something. When you understand, right understanding will give you right thoughts. And right thoughts will give you right speech. And right speech will give you right action. This is what is called love. Daily examine yourself where you stand. This self-introspection diary is meant for that purpose, you see, for various ways. To enable you to withdraw from outside, come within your own self and see the world over from that level, not from the level of the body. Let me be more clear now. Sometimes you see somebody loves Master. Others begin to love him, you see, for the sake of the Master, but that very man stands in the way of the Master. You see, instead of turning your love for the Master, your love is turned to that man. From the level of the soul, if you love, that's all right. You won't be attached. Otherwise, that stands in the way of the man concerned you love, and that love should have gone to Master. That stands in the way. Both fall into the ditch. That who loves and those who stand in the way. This is the general, I think, failure most of the people get. They think you ought to love somebody who loves Master, that is love of Master. Well, if you do it from the level of the soul, that's all right. But you are tied to the body, you know. These are very delicate points, you see. Not given in books, I tell you. But these little things we are led away from the world. They try to understand and live up to it. Very few days, your practice will give you more result, better result than others. So yesterday I was talking about how love deteriorates into attachment. Yesterday, you see. So love is an essence of the soul. It has to be contacted with the over-self to have profuse love, you see, overflowing love. When it is attached to bodies, outward attachments, environments, then that is deteriorated and is called attachment. Yesterday it was explained how we, on the way to God, we are stopped on the way and instead of going to the right direction, we have our way to the downward position. Today is not what is love and how it is deteriorated, but how the love should be exercised. It is already in us. We are also love personified, being a drop of the ocean of all love. So this love should go, as I told you yesterday, with God. And if you have not seen God, the human pole which is overflowing with the love of God. Now, for example, if you see some advocate, naturally you remember courts and cases going on in the courts, is it not? When you see the form of an advocate, you naturally remember courts and cases going on in the courts. When you see a doctor, then naturally your attention is diverted to medicines and sick people or hospitals. So similarly, when you see some man who is on the way, when you see him, naturally your attention is just directed to the field of work he is doing. So master is one, and the saint is one who is laborer, you see, in the harvest of God, you see. Harvest is rich, laborers are wanted. But think of you, always think of God, nothing that comes of itself. So always you remember it, remember master. You don't remember the form of him, but he is a prototype of God on earth. God is in him. He is also within you to go, of course. But there it is not manifest. The same thing is explained by all masters who came in the past, you see. Only their language is different, way of expression is different, mode of expression, but they say the same thing. Those who have seen me have seen my father. Similarly, when you see a master, you see God in him. But don't take him as human son of man, but as God in him. Only then you are saved. Your love will overflow. If you think him as a human man like you, then even if you take him a good man, you can have only goodness. So when you think of a master as a prototype of God on earth, a manifested God in him, only then the God, true remembrance will be overflowed within you. This is what is meant by what he was reading. So generally, you see, when you think of animal consciousness, you forget your own self. So I spoke of one event of Guru Nanak. He was weighing out some free wheat in a shop where he was employed. So he began 1, 2, 3, 4 times. He had to give 13 shears, 13 pounds of something, which he was weighing out. When he reached the 12, and he came to the word 13, 13 word in Hindi means dine. I am dine. He was intoxicated. He went on repeating, I am dying, I am dying, I am dying, we go to all the graves over there, you see. So this is, you see, those who got love for God. Naturally, you would see anything, that love is overflowed. So in that case, such a disciple becomes, what you say, absorbed in the Master. As St. Paul says, it is I live not now, I Christ lives in me. Even all of the saints in other countries also had the same thing. He says, my breast, my inner self is so much overflowing with my master that I have forgotten myself who is he. He is alive. The same expression is given by almost everybody, of course, in their own language. Their mode of expression may be little different, but they say the same thing. So such like love, when you see a master, don't see his form. God is him. That is true love of the master. True love of God too. Just as I gave you an example just now, when you see an advocate, naturally, remember how the course comes in, you see. When you see a doctor, naturally, remember how hospitals and sick people will dance and arise. Similar, when you see a saint, then you naturally remember God. Because he's a prototype of remembrance of God. He's overflowing with the love of God. So when you, Maulana Rumi says, when you accept a master, well, you accept God and the prophet is in both. If you read a book, if you read the preface gives in digest form what is in the book, in few pages. Whole book after reading what you follow, you understand that you can follow from the preface before it. That gives a very digest of the whole thing, what is done with the book. Similar say, when you see a master, you just read the preface of the whole God, you see. This is an example to show, when you meet a master, you meet a God in him. So, such like God in man is meant only with the grace of God, who you want to contact, you see. You are just finding after finding him, you see. So I gave an example of, there was a disciple of one saint named Beek. He was so much so absorbed that he was always used to remember Beek. Not God, but Beek. He took Beek as a prototype of God on earth. He was, his whole repetition was not of the five names, but of the Beek, of the Master. As I also used to do sometimes. This is but natural, you see. He sees the God in him, not the Son of Man. He was repeating all the time, "Oh, Beek, oh, Beek." That is Mohammedan reign, you see. Mohammedan people, they ask him, "Well, who is your God?" He said, "My God is Beek. My Master is God." "Who is his prophet?" "Prophet Muhammad," generally the Mohammedan say. "He said, no, my Beek is prophet." That was, you see, really against the law, you see, of the Mohammedan law. So they just pass sentence, death sentence, capital sentence for him. So such like cases of capital punishment were also shown to the king for approval, final approval. So when the case was represented to the king, he saw the man, his eyes were all intoxicated. "Well, who is your God?" "My Beek is my God." "Who is your prophet?" "My Beek is my prophet." "All the living, don't mind him." If people said, "Well, he will run away." "No, no, no, don't." Then he said, "Well, look here, Beek. Will you ask your Beek? There has been very dust of rains in our country for the last so many months. So if you kindly request your Beek to just fall rain, so surface will be all right and will grow more corn." "Oh yes, I will tell you." Just a child, you see, so very confident about his mother. "You bring all I have got from my mother." How confident is it, you see? There's no doubt whatsoever that mother cannot give. He thinks his mother has everything. "So all right, when will you come?" "I'll come in a day or two. Not tomorrow, but day after." That is heavy rain throughout the country. Third day he came up. "Well, King, can thanks to your Beek, huh, that you got sufficient rain. Very kind of you and of your Beek too." Then he just offered him some, what you said, this tribute is paid for all land revenue, etc., for 21 villages. Revenue of 21 villages to go to the Beek to meet with the expenses of those come to him for. Bless him. He said, "Oh, well, this is an ephemeral thing. I am not going to take this to my God. He doesn't need all this." So such like remembrance gives you true love of God. As you think, so you become. The very appearance of it reminds you. As a compass, you see, when you even shake it, even it need to go to the north, always. So in worldly affairs, in everything, you always have the sweet memories of God. To look at the Son of Man overflowing with the love of God is to meet the God. Like I said, I told you, say, who has seen me has seen my Father.
Good evening and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was two morning talks called Love Versus Attachment and How to Love God. They were given on January 4th and 5th, 1968 at Sawan Ashram in Delhi, India. Our reader tonight is Rick Casey. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Christine. I will be reading tonight from the Japji, continuing where I left off last time, starting with stanza 19 on page 147 of the PDF on the Ruhani Satsang website. Stanza 19. Countless thy names and countless thy places, unapproachable and inaccessible, thy innumerable heavenly plateau. Even by the word countless, we fail to describe thee. By words, we describe thee, and by words, we praise thee. By words, we acquire divine knowledge, and in words are sung thy hymns and attributes. It is words we employ in speech and in writing, and them is our fate ordained. But he who ordains is above such writ. As thou ordainest, so do we receive. Thou art immanent in all, and nothing is where thy word is not. What power have I to conceive of thy wonderful nature? Too poor am I to make an offering of my life to thee. Whatever pleases thee is good. Thou art forevermore, O Formless One. Our souls have been wandering under the control of the mind and the outgoing faculties, and have been defiled by impressions of the outside world, so much so that we have become identified with the body and forgotten our own self and God. How to purify the mind from the dirt of sins and free the soul from the bondage of matter forms the subject matter of this stanza. To make his will one's own by communion with the Word is the only means to this end. Actions, good or bad, fail to procure communion within, as they keep one attached to the outward observances which bind the soul to matter. Lord Krishna says, good or bad actions are fetters which equally bind the soul to the world, irrespective of whether they are of gold or of iron. The horizon of mind is darkened with the mists of sin gathering in previous births. Until these are cleared away, the Sun of Divinity cannot shine forth in full glory. Holy Nam, the Divine Word, and not else, clears the mist away and restores the mind to its original transparency. There is no holier sanctuary than that of the purified mind. Stanza 20. When the hands, feet, and the body are besmeared, they are washed clean with water. When the clothes get dirty and polluted, they are cleansed by soap. When one's mind gets defiled by sin, it can be purified only by communion with the Word. Men do not become saints or sinners merely by words, but they carry deeds with them wherever they go. As one sows, so does one reap. O Nanak, men come and go by the wheel of birth and death as ordained by his will. Good actions, like acts of mercy and charity, although commendable in themselves, do not have an important bearing on the highest spiritual attainment. They cease to be of consequence once the soul begins its inner journey from the till, or third eye. If therefore thy eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Matthew 6:22. Born along the current of the word, the soul reaches Amritsar, or the fount of nectar, the Amritsar in man. There are impurities that may be still clinging to the soul. Are finally washed away. Thus the soul is made fit for the onward journey to the highest spiritual plane of Sat Nam, which is of ineffable greatness and glory. Stanza 21. Pilgrimages, austerities, mercy, charity, and almsgiving cease to be of any consequence when one gets an ingress into the till, the inner eye. Communion with and practice of the Holy Word with heart full of devotion procures admittance into the inner spiritual realms, washing away the dirt of sins at the sacred fount within. All virtues are thine, O Lord. I possess not one. There can be no worship without practicing the Holy Word. From thee has emanated the Bani, or the Holy Word, which is the path to salvation. Thou art truth, enchantingly sweet, and my mind yearns for thee. What the occasion, what the epoch, what the week, what the day, what the season, what the hour, when thou first came into being or expression. Commentary. The Pandits could not discover it, else they would have recorded it in the Puranas. Nor could the Qazis determine it, else it would have been in the Quran. Nor could the Yogis or any other divine it. The Creator alone knoweth the hour when he came into manifestation. How shall I address thee or praise thee, O Lord? How shall I describe thee or know thee? O Nanak, one and all speak of thee, each wiser than the rest. Great art thou, and greater still is thy holy word. What it wills cometh to pass. Thy greatness thou alone knowest. And those, O Nanak, that claim to know the most shall have no honor in the life beyond. God's creation is manifold and beyond human comprehension. The finite cannot conceive the infinite. All attempts to know Him and His creation fail. However, one thing, says Nanak, is certain, and that is that everything emanates from the one source. Stanza 22. There are millions of nether regions and skies above skies. Man has wandered endlessly in his search. The Vedas also say the same. The Muslim books speak of 18,000 universes, but it is the same power that sustains them all. If it could be accounted for, account of it would have been recorded. All attempts at description are in vain. O Nanak, admit his greatness. He alone knows himself. Even if one, through communion with the Word, merges into the infinite, one still cannot fathom its depths, for the illimitable has no limits. It is enough that the stream loses itself in the ocean. Blessed are they whose hearts are filled with divine love, and no earthly possessions compare with them. Stanza 23. His devotees praise him, yet never attain full knowledge of the infinite. Like streams tumbling into the ocean, they know not the depths therein. Even kings and emperors, with heaps of wealth and vast dominion, compare not with an ant filled with the love of God. God's creation is limitless. Many have tried to fathom its mystery, yet none can know him until they reach his height. The soul beholds God when it enters into Sach Khand, the highest of the spiritual planes. How can it be otherwise? How can one behold what is pure spirit with these material eyes? One must transcend on the wings of the Word, and one can only do so through his grace. Stanza 24. Endless are his praises, endless the words of commendation, endless his works, and endless his gifts, endless his vision, and endless his inspiration. Endless and beyond understanding is his purpose, endless his creation, and endless the ends thereof. Endless men's search in anguish for his limits, but his limits cannot be found. Endless he is, and none can know his end. The more we say, the more he is. Exalted is the Lord, and exalted his abode. More exalted still, his holy word. He who reaches his height, he alone may glimpse him. O Nanak, he alone knows his greatness. It is only his glance of grace can lift us to his height. His bounty is supreme. Magnanimous as he is, he showers his gifts on all alike, whether good or bad. All have their share, none is ignored. He knows us all better than we do, and bestows on us what is best for us. But the greatest of his bounties is the gift of the eternal song. When he confers it on man out of his grace, it makes him the King of Kings. Stanza 25. His benevolence is manifold, and none can record it. He is the giver of all, coveting nothing in return. Many are the warriors who are beggars at his door, and many more whose number is beyond reckoning. Many are those who, misusing his gifts, wallow in sensuality. Many who, receiving his gifts, deny him. Many the fools who only eat and enjoy, but think not of the donor. Many lie afflicted by hunger, misery, and pain, which too are thy gifts, O Lord. Bondage and salvation both go by thy will. None else has any say therein. If some dare claim otherwise, he shall soon have cause to repent of his temerity. He knows all, and bestows accordingly. If few there be that realize this, O Nanak, on whom he bestows his gift of the song celestial, he is the King of Kings. Nanak, in this passage, refers to the uniqueness of God's attributes. Not only is he unique and peerless, but so are his regents, the master souls, who sell the priceless wares of his holy word. Many have sung his praises, and countless more to come might do the same. Nevertheless, the Almighty has remained and remains and shall remain unsaid. Stanza 26. Peerless are his attributes and priceless the pearls therein. Peerless are his dealers and priceless his wares and stores. Peerless are the customers that come and priceless the goods they buy. Peerless is his love, and peerless those that lose themselves in it. Peerless is his law, and peerless his court. Peerless his scales of justice, and peerless their measure. Peerless is his generosity, peerless his acceptance. Peerless his mercy, and peerless his commands. How peerless, how priceless. Who can describe him? His devotees, singing his praises, have sunk in silence. And so have the Vedas, the Puranas, and the learned. The Brahmas and the Indras sing of him, and the Gopis and Govind do likewise. The Siva and holy Siddhas sing of him. The mortals and the immortals all sing his praises. Countless speak of him, and countless are about to make an attempt. Countless more departed while singing of him. Still he remains and shall remain indescribable. Many can behold him only as he reveals himself unto him. O Nanak, know him as the only true one, and those that claim to understand him, they are surely the most foolish of men. Nanak now sketches in highly lyrical language the picture of God watching from his abode his many creations which bow before him in reverence. Stanza 27. How wonderful thy gate, how wonderful thy mansion, from which thou watchest thy great creation. Countless the instruments and harmonies that play therein. Countless the measures, countless the singers that sing thy praises. The elements, wind, water, and fire sing of thee. And of thee sing the King of Death and his recording angels. To thee sing the gods and goddesses, whose beauty is of thy making. To thee sing Siva, Brahma, and likewise Indra from his throne. to thee, sing the siddhas in their meditation, and the sadhus in their contemplation. To thee, sing the ascetics, the righteous, the contented, and the heroes, no less. To thee, sing the learned pandits and the rishis from age to age, reciting from the holy Vedas. To thee, sing the heart-enslaving nymphs in the heaven, the earth, and the nether regions. To thee, sing thy jewels, saints, in the 68 places of pilgrimage. To thee, sing the mighty warriors, the heroes of great prowess, and all living creatures. To thee, sing the earthly regions, the heavens, and the universes, created and supported by thee. Those that please thee also sing thy praises and are saturated with thy love and devotion. And there are countless more that sing of thee, whom one cannot even remember. All lie beyond the ken of Nanak. He is, and he is alone, the ever-existent Lord. He is the truth, and true is his holy Naam. He is, and shall exist, forevermore. He who created all creatures shall never depart, the worlds may be destroyed. He who made nature with its many colors and many forms looks after his own handiwork as it behooves his own greatness. He is the supreme master and does what he lists. He is the King of Kings, the Almighty Lord, and ours, O Nanak, is only to abide by his will. Nanak, now turning from his contemplation of the Almighty, concentrates on the kind of life required to reach his door. During his time, Hinduism had precipitated itself into mere casteism and ritualism. The rites remained, but the spirit was lost. The world was considered the root of all evil, and becoming a yogin and following certain set practices was thought the only means to salvation. Nanak points out the inadequacy of such an outlook and stresses that it is the inner discipline, and not the outer codes that bring true spiritual progress. Instead of the wooden earrings and mendicant's wallet of the yogins, he recommends contentment, self-respect, and endeavor. He recommends contentment. Instead of their body smearing ashes, cloak, and staff, he recommends constant meditation, preparedness for death, and the anchor of a living master's teachings. Salvation is not the monopoly of the so-called yogins. It is made possible only by a certain spiritual condition, and those who attain it, even if they are not yogins, may reach the highest. And conversely, those who are outwardly yogins but have failed to achieve this condition may never reach God's door. This spiritual condition not only requires the rigorous inner discipline, but enjoins a Catholic outlook on life, an outlook where one looks on all as equals and sees his hand in everything. Stanza 28. Let contentment be your earrings, and endeavor for the divine and respect for the higher self be your wallet, and constant meditation on Him be your ashes. Let preparedness for death be your cloak, and let your body be like unto a chaste virgin. Let your master's teachings be your supporting staff. The highest religion is to rise to universal brotherhood. I, to consider all creatures your equals. Conquer your mind, for victory over self is victory over the world. Hail, hail to Him alone, the primal, pure, eternal, immortal, and immutable in all ages. Carrying on his substitution of the outer practices of the yogins by inner spiritual disciplines, Nanak recommends that we should make divine knowledge our food. Man does not live by bread alone. Inculcate charity and mercy, and attune ourselves to the music of the divine word. Nanak also forestalls the dangers that lie on the spiritual journey. Not only is wealth a hindrance, but the power one gained through self-discipline and partial spiritual attainment may itself become an obstacle in the way of fuller realization. One begins to practice these occult powers, and absorbed in them, one tends to forget the real goal. Nanak therefore warns us against this possibility. Once we have begun the journey Godwards, we must not rest, waver, or wander on the way. Stanza 29. Let divine knowledge be your bread. Let mercy be your steward. Let the divine music vibrating in all be your trumpet. He is the only Lord and has strung creation according to His will. Wealth and supernatural powers estrange one from the Lord. The world goes on the two principles of union and separation, and all receive their share as He ordains. Hail, hail to Him alone, the primal, pure, eternal, immortal, and immutable in all ages. Nanak now turns his attention from the means of salvation to the working of God's creation. The universe moves on the triple principles concerned respectively with creating, sustaining, and destroying. All these principles work according to His will and are only His agents. But though God watches over these agents, they paradoxically cannot know Him, who is the subjective and the formless, since they are part of the objective creation. I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from the Japji, ending on stanza 29 at the top of page 165 in the PDF from the website. Thank you, Master, for everything.
And thank you, Rick, for reading Master's inspiring words to us. There were 60 participants at tonight's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for your loving guidance and blessings.
So we have to decide what we want at heart of ours. Are we here only for the worldly things? Are we here only for the name and fame of the world? Are we here only to have things of the other world? Or heaven? Are we really after only emancipation from birth and death? real lover wants none of them, you see. He wants God, and God alone.